na 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 na, baje chana ranjana. Yashoda na na na, baje chana ranjana. Jamuna tira banna chari. Jamuna tira banna chari. Ajay radha madhava kunja bihari. Gopi janna pallava girivada dhari. Yashoda nanda braja jana ranjana. Yashoda nanda braja jana ranjana. Jamuna tira banna chari. Jamuna tira banna chari. Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Jaya Radhesham, 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 Jaya Radhesham. Nitai Gaur Haribo, 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 Gaur Haribo. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Jaya Prabhupada. Shri Guru, Shri Gauranga Ki Jai, Holy Name Ki Jai. Hare Krishna, everybody. So we'll invoke some auspiciousness by chanting and repeating. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're going to read a verse from the Bhagavad Gita. The Bhagavad Gita is actually a song that God is singing to his disciple. And this is a very nice verse that describes what he's giving in this song. So I'll read the Sanskrit. This is chapter 7, which is called The Knowledge of the Absolute, and this is text 2. Jnanam teham savijnanam. Idam vakshyami asheshatah. Yajyatva nehad bhyo nyayaj. Yatavyam avashishyate. Someone would like to repeat it?
Jnanam teham savijnanam. Jnanam teham savijnanam.
Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. I shall now declare unto you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. Purport. Complete knowledge includes knowledge of the phenomenal world, the spirit behind it, and the source of both of them. This is transcendental knowledge. The Lord wants to explain the above-mentioned system of knowledge because Arjuna is Krishna's confidential devotee and friend. In the beginning of the fourth chapter, this explanation was given by the Lord, and it is again confirmed here. Complete knowledge can be achieved only by the devotee of the Lord in disciplic succession directly from the Lord. Therefore, one should be intelligent enough to know the source of all knowledge, who is the cause of all causes, and the only object for meditation in all types of yoga practice. When the cause of all causes becomes known, then everything knowable becomes known, and nothing remains unknown. It's a pretty heavy statement that everything in this book is all that you need to know. So we should listen carefully to these instructions that Krishna gives in actually about a 45-minute conversation with his disciple. Here it takes us many years, many days, many months to read it and to really study it, and a lifetime of practice to realize it. So this is Krishna's delivering both material and spiritual knowledge. Vedas actually mean all knowledge, everything. So here he's explaining that in detail. And you notice here that he's not saying this is for the Christians or for the Jews and the Muslims. He's just explaining the absolute truth to the conditioned souls. And we are all conditioned. We're all in these bodies, and we have our limitations, and we're conditioned. We can, we cannot do certain things. But he's addressing this as the science of God consciousness, not really a religion, so to say. Now, if we go to the university here, over the University of Florida, and we walk into their library, we'd be pretty amazed at how many books there are of knowledge. Sometimes I go in there and I'm just, you know, there's so many categories, you can't even conceive of them, how many categories, what less all the knowledge that is in every single category. And I know that when I was young, that my favorite subject was always science. I would go to summer camp in the Keys, to marine biology camp, and I would go to the museum for microscopy classes in the summer. I was really into science because science gives you facts, right? You can take things apart. It tells you how you put it back together. You know how they work. And there's proof. There's experiments, observation, and you gain some result from this. So I was very attracted to science. Maybe some of you all also found that this was pretty fascinating, and so many different kinds of sciences. And then when my intelligence matured a little bit, I started to look around me and realize that not everyone is interested in these gross material things, that there's actually another class of people, religious people. I was not religious at all. A long time ago in school, you used to take what are called PSAT tests to test your personality. I would get zero in religion. I had no interest whatsoever. But then I started to think, well, what? These people are so renounced, they give up all these nice material things, and they so renounced. What's going on? Is this something else? Is there something beyond? Is there something subtle that I could study and find out what it is? I want to know everything. I want to, experience everything. So then I would go and I would get the radio and put it under my covers at night and listen to a preacher or something, because it wasn't cool to be religious, so I'd have to sneak and try to figure out what was going on within the religion realm. And then I would take the Bible and put another book around it and pretend like I was reading another book, and I was trying to study the Bible, trying to make ends out of it. A lot of parables, a lot of names, and a lot of good lessons. How to be good, how to behave properly. Not too much about God, though. Still, there were questions. There was not enough facts. There wasn't enough proof. There wasn't experience. There wasn't experiments. And so then, this was in the 60s, and some alternative methods of self-realization were popping up, and that it made me even more excited to find out the absolute truth, the knowledge. What is the basis of knowledge? And so then I, of course, yoga was very attractive because it was material. You could use your body, and it was also spiritual. Supposedly, it would let you transcend, which I didn't know what that meant, but it sounded pretty good to get out of this material world. Some people aren't always so happy in the material world. Just like yesterday, we were down at the football stadium. Everyone's happy, big game, you know, everyone's excited about the big game. And up comes three girls, and one girl, like, passes out. She'd been drinking too much. Fun. And then, kabooey, she was down. Nothing could revive her. She got sick. You're like, oh, there goes the material fun, right? So it's not all great. And so the spiritual attraction is there because inside we are a spirit soul and we're actually attracted. We should be attracted to understand this higher understanding of who we are. So this yoga process, like it's describing here, has different levels of it. And the topmost yoga system is called bhakti yoga. Bhakti meaning a connection to God, to actually understand God. Now I was thinking yoga, I thought that was something else, but ultimately that's what yoga means, to connect. And so in this bhakti, we do it through devotion. And here in this temple, we teach that art of devotion to God. And there is there proof? Yes, one can experience it. There's many, many lessons in the Bhagavad Gita, just like the very first part of the Bhagavad Gita explains about transmigration of the soul. So much knowledge is there, chapters about that we are the soul and how it moves, how it stay. It goes from, gets this body and that body, and gets an old lady body like I have, and then it loses its body, and then you get another one, and it's just like, wow, this is really a science. You know, he spends time explaining these laws that happen. And we can see it. We can see it happen, just like this little kid here, running up and down the whole time. You know, and soon he'll have a body like his father, and his father's body will go away. And so this is transmigration. We can see it right in front of us, you know, right in front of us, very vividly, especially after 70, that it's changing all the time. And also karma. Actually, Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that karma, action, the science of action and inaction is very difficult to understand. But he explains it, all the details, the whole science of how to exist here in the material world and not get a result, and how to get free from this karma, and get out of the cycle of reincarnation. So much very practical knowledge that's described in the Bhagavad Gita, which should be taken very much advantage of. And plus, what was most attractive to me was that it was an active meditation, that we don't just sit around. As you saw here, we're all dancing and chanting, and people are back there getting ready to offer food, and people are honoring prasadam. So many different things are going on, but in relationship with God. So therefore, it is enlivening, and one can experience that enlivenment just by actively meditating that I'm doing this not for myself, but I'm doing it for Krishna. And that the best thing is that we get two for one in bhakti yoga. We get self-realization and God-realization. Just like here it's describing that I'm going to tell you all about the soul, I'm going to tell you all about what's going on in the material world, I'm going to tell you and who I am. I'm the source of all this. So we can understand our relationship with God also. So this is a great package that we have here. We can understand everything that we need to know. Srila Prabhupada said that sometimes he would be asked, so what do you call your religion? Because we don't really have a name for it. He goes, well, you know, what faith are you? And he goes, we're not a religion. We're a science. This is a science of how to please God. And we know, if you can remember way back in your science class, that there was, when you're doing a science experiment, there's certain things that you have to have. You have to have a controlled environment. Here we have a wonderful environment. Everyone's fired up to please God. And we have to have the proper tools, and we do. We have on the back wall, you see so many, many wonderful books of knowledge of how to please God and who he is. And then we have to have the proper instructor. Srila Prabhupada has given us all this knowledge so that we can understand it and we can use it. And then, of course, we have to have the procedure, which is the Maha Mantra, taking prasadam, dancing and chanting. And then, of course, the observation to see how we're doing every day. We can hear Bhagavatam and relate. Am I following the rules? Am I advancing Krishna consciousness? How's my japa doing? How is my life going? Am I less in anxiety? Am I more attached to spiritual things and material things? So it's a wonderful experiment that we can take part in. Of course, then there's the results, which we experience in our heart. Otherwise, none of you would be here. You'd be somewhere else. It's because something is happening in there. Something is churning. That love for Krishna is churning. So bhakti has it all. And the Vedas, of course, are non-different. Bhagavad Gita are the words of the Lord. And there's some basic knowledge, but so much more knowledge can be realized by just reading it again and again. Prabhupada also said that religion without experiencing God is not really religion. It's cheating. You can talk of God, but if you haven't realized God, it's not really religion. So, of course, we have here in Bhagavad Gita, it is being spoken by the Supreme Lord. He's going to give us all the knowledge, so we have to really listen up, and then we can experience it. And our soul has been waiting so long for this. It's been hearing all this other garbage, all this other knowge from day one. You're this, you're that, that you need this, you need to go to Walmart, you need Pepsi Cola, you need so many things in the material world. But it's been hankering. I want to know who God is. It's been too long. This curtain of Maya was wrapped around us for so long. So now it's time to turn that back. And we can do that by hearing from this Vedic knowledge. And this knowledge hasn't changed. Now, if I was to go get my old biology book back from fifth or sixth grade, whenever you study that, it would be an entirely different edition, completely revised. Probably half the knowledge was completely, thrown out the garbage, and new stuff has come in and constantly being changed. The knowledge has to be changed. Otherwise, it wouldn't be exciting. But here we see the Bhagavad Gita has been around thousands of years. Thousands of years. Great, great personalities, Emerson and Thoreau, Einstein. So many people relished this knowledge. I remember reading that Emerson he said in one poem that he was waiting for his Vedic literature. It was going to be coming from Germany, I think, because that's where they first figured out Sanskrit, how to change it, to transliterate it. And he said, this is my treasure box that I've been waiting for so long. So it's been relished and appreciated for thousands of years, and nothing has changed. And that's why it's potent. That's why it is affecting us and the whole world. Bhagavad Gita is known everywhere. Understood, I don't know. And lived by, I don't know. But there's so many bonuses by coming in contact with this literature. But unfortunately, we see that material knowledge is much more readily trusted and accepted. We look at the newspaper every day, we hear it on, we look on the computer, oh, this news channel is saying this and that one's saying that, then it must be true. Many times they don't always say the same thing, but usually you can find a couple that say the same thing. And so therefore we take it as fact. We get our books from the library. We go to college, they're giving us the information, scholars, PhDs, so many politicians, so many leaders of society are telling us that, and we accept it. And now with AI, artificial intelligence, hey, that's the absolute truth. Or what is that thing? GBT or what? Chat something or other. Or you could, oh yes, that's my source of knowledge. I just go there, and it's the absolute truth. You know, and pretty soon the AI is going to know more than we are, and then what happens? I'm not going to be around. I don't have to worry about it. But you all have to worry about it. So why is it so difficult for us to accept the Vedas? You know, so many people say, oh, it's, you know, someone made it up. It's just concoction. It's mysticism. It's this, that. There's no proof. Show me your God. You know, how do you know? How do you, you know? And it's, the faith is very weak for spiritual knowledge. Material knowledge, very strong, but so weak. And then they write it off and they say, well, God is inconceivable. If there is a God, he's just inconceivable. I would want my God to be inconceivable. I wouldn't want some ordinary Joe. I would want someone who's way out of my understanding, because he's great. He's much greater than we could ever understand. But we think, I'm so great, no one could be too much greater, maybe a little bit greater. So it's unfortunately that they don't have that trust unless they dive in and experience it themselves. Just like if an ant crawled into my house, and they do that sometimes, and they looked around, they would never conceive of what's going on in there, that I've got this project going, that I'm worried about this, and then I have to give class, and I'm trying to do this. They have no idea of that whole world. So we're little ants come here in the material world, and someone says, well, there's a lot going on in the spiritual world. There's a whole kingdom, and God is there, and you're this. And do we take it in? Oh, no, that's fairy tales. You just made it up. No. This is spoken, sung by the Supreme Lord. So how to strengthen that faith? Well, the Vedas encourage us to inquire submissively, to ask questions. And you'll receive them, I guarantee you. You'll find your answer in the Vedic literature. And if not, then just start at an elementary stage. Krishna's external energy is amazing. Just go out in nature. Every day I come across these insects, which are like the most far-out looking things you could ever understand. I mean, they got all these things, and they look like something from another planet. And the other day, Friday, we went marble shopping for the Nisringa Temple over here. And we went to this big showroom in Jacksonville, big slabs of marble, huge, you know, 12-foot by 7-foot pieces of marble cut out of the earth, Mother Earth. And it was like going into an artist gallery. Every piece was like, one was like a sunset. It was like you could just put it on your wall, you know, and another one was like the ocean, and another one was lightning coming all out, and another one looked like zebra. It was just like, this is God's artistic work, you know? It's just unimaginable, inconceivable that he can do that. Mother Earth can do that. So that's also a way to meditate. And then you can also think of the consciousness in your heart and in everyone in this room, that God is in everyone's heart right now, and he knows what you're thinking, and he can see what you're doing, and he can give you remembrance. He can give me forgetfulness of what I should say. So many things. He's in control. To think of it, how inconceivable he is. Yes, he is. But he's very anxious for us to know him. So therefore, he's saying here that I'm going to declare everything. I'm going to tell you everything you need to know. And then he also says that I'm going to teach you how to practice it so that you can actually experience it. Because if you come in contact with God, your senses become awake. Your spiritual senses can become purified. And so we have our japa, we have kirtan, we have scripture, we have prasadam, we have service. So many different ways we can engage these material senses in and begin to experience a direct contact with the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada also mentions that this process is very important because it is purifying. And when you think of purification, you think, oh, that's kind of scary, you know, because, you know, you have to purge out all this garbage and all this contamination that's been coming in, been poured into us for so long. What's in there? What's underneath all that? It can be kind of scary. But it is possible by simple process, by the chanting, and it's not so difficult to wake up our consciousness. We just have to shout the holy names of God, and it helps to clear that up. And then we can get a clear reception, and then we can actually begin to hear the name of God and experience God when we chant him. So we have to take all these different processes very seriously to become purified. That means we have to be very sincere, and also we have to be very patient, because it's not like it's going to happen overnight. Recently, I've been thinking our barn over here is such a mess that I would call for a big maha cleanup, you know? And I was thinking, boy, it's not just going to take a few hours. It's going to take a long time to clean that barn. And then you're going to find places that really need cleaning, inside closets and in there and underneath and on top and all kinds of things. In the same way, when we start cleaning our consciousness, we say, oh, boy, I don't want to go there. That's really dirty. No, I don't want to go there, you know? So, but we should. We should see it in this lifetime. It's very important that we do this process if we really want to experience the topmost understanding of God. And the formula, the most important formula to remember, is that we should accept what's going to be favorable for this, to execute this process properly. And we should reject those things that aren't going to help us, that are only going to contaminate us more and keep us bound and tied up to this material existence and keep us in darkness. I can remember when I first heard the Bhagavad Gita, some verses from it. It was just like a light went on. You know, they call it, what do you call it? You know, this is like, it's just a brilliant light. Yes, this is the absolute truth. And so if you want to speed up the process, there are ways. Actually, the Supreme Lord, Lord Chaitanya, came 500 years ago, and he saw that everyone was suffering, and so he selected some disciples, just like Krishna's accepting Arjuna here to give knowledge. And just 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya sat Rupa Goswami down and told him within 10 days so much knowledge, so many details of the process of devotional service that we can fine-tune our devotional service and encourage us to dive deeper into this ocean. And of course, that's the nectar of devotion, which Prabhupada encouraged us to read at least 10 times. There's so many facts and figures in there. If you want facts and figures, it'll tell you all about the Supreme Lord's characteristics, his activities, his likes, his dislikes. It'll discuss how and why to do all these processes. And it takes a peek into all Krishna's characteristics, which is inspiring to keep going in Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada didn't hold back on anything. He gave us so many books that will completely satisfy your intelligence to know that, yes, this is the absolute truth. Sometimes Prabhupada would say that religion without philosophy is sentiment. And we see, we have so much philosophy. There's no, you know, no lack of philosophy in this religion or this science. And sentiment, well, sentiment is there also. There is affection, because when you do devotional service, it develops gradually as you purge all these contaminations away and become a little attracted to serving. Then that attachment, that attraction to serve more, and then attachment to Krishna develops. And then automatically, one will want to dance and sing and be affectionate to each other and to be compassionate and try to help other people. It's just a natural sequence of when you become involved in devotional service and you become involved in this movement, you'll see yourself move towards Krishna closer and closer. The soul is by nature very joyful. And if we think we can enjoy out there, we're only going to be frustrated. So we'll see that bhakti yoga, it actually is very satisfying. This is a quote from Srila Prabhupada in the Chaitanya Charita. It says, sincerely engaging in the service of the Lord with love and faith, one can talk with him and receive instructions by which he can speedily return you back to Godhead. So this is a promise by Krishna that that if we're just sincere in our service, that he will someday even talk to us. And this was actually in regards to the stories of Madhavendra Puri and also of Sakshi Gopal. These are very intimate devotees of the Lord that were so sincere in their devotion that the Lord appeared to him in dreams and actually in front of him and spoke to him. So this is something that you can experience. This is the ripe fruit of our devotional service that we can begin now. So it's a nice balance. The philosophy and the affection goes very nicely together, and we find that our lives are actually very satisfying. It's not like it's just dry philosophy, but it's also a society of wonderful, loving devotees. Prabhupada gave the expertise of combining these two, of the devotion and the sentiment, the affection for Krishna, by giving us very early in the movement. I had just joined, and I remember when the book arrived, and that was the Krishna book. And we just sat down and started flipping through the pages. It was just amazing, you know, to see all the pictures of Krishna. Because Prabhupada realized that you're not going to fall in love with somebody you don't know anything about. So he gave us the Bhagavatam, which is the cream of all the Vedas, the very topmost nectaring part of the Vedas to tell us all about Krishna, but he put in the philosophy, and therefore very balanced, and therefore we could really practically understand who Krishna is and who we are in relationship to Krishna. So we are all eligible to engage in Krishna consciousness, and we all have the inherited right to experience the pleasure that we should be having in connection with Krishna. So we should pray to have that increased faith all the time that, yes, Krishna is giving us, as he says, I shall now declare upon you in full this knowledge, both phenomenal and numinous. This being known, nothing further shall remain for you to know. So your search is ended. You don't need to read anything else but these books. Of course, the more attentive, the more receptive we are, and the more we actually practically use this knowledge, then Krishna will reveal to us accordingly. So maybe someone would like to share an experience of when the light bulb went on, when this knowledge actually clicked, and you realize that, yes, this is that knowledge. It didn't take me very long. I just read one little pamphlet, and boom. I think Nagaraj the other day said he read Reservoir of Pleasure. Boom. Yes, this is it. So it doesn't take very much. Prabhupada said even just one line, if you understand it. Anyone remember when they really relished that first time of realizing that this is the absolute truth?
Anyone would like to share?
He'd like to. Achai.
I remember very distinctly, it was 1980, and a friend invited me to go to the old New York temple where they were putting on a play of Ramayana. Sorry. So he took me to see play of Ramayana at the temple with Lokamangala and what was his name, Sankirtan, all the famous devotees who were actors then. And seeing that actually convinced me that God was a person.
Nice.
Thank you. Mataji, can you please name three ways to amend our past mistakes?
Well, as soon as you raise your hands in front of the deities, all the past karma, all that nonsense goes away. So you can do that.
So that's one.
No problem. Okay. You can chant Hare Krishna, and just like Haridas Thakur said, all the results of sinful activities, more than you can commit, are gone. And you can bow down to Srila Prabhupada, and he will embrace you.
Thank you. But for someone that doesn't have this kind of faith, like at least I do, I have that, but for someone that doesn't have Krishna conscious faith, what would be like a good way to point them into the right direction without...
Well, I was thinking of the mercy of Lord Chaitanya yesterday when that lady was getting sick all over the place and everything. But she was there for at least a half hour hearing the holy name. So I was thinking, hey, and she's got devotees concerned over her, and she's getting association, probably got a pamphlet. And so, hey, some people get it whether they like it or not, by the holy name, prasadam.
Yeah. Hare Krishna. I felt the same way yesterday as we were chanting. I'm like, at least she's hearing the holy name, even if she's unconscious. For me, coming from the Muslim faith and always questioning and just seeking and thirsting for a connection, as soon as I, my husband not telling me, I went to the Miami temple, and I melted in front of Lord Jagannath because I needed a personality. I needed that, and that was my light bulb moment.
Wow.
Or before that, I felt like I was chanting, and it was like a white room, and there's no connection in this big void. So I encourage for people like me that were seeking, even from the Muslim faith, to get in front of the deities even. And in some way, some people need that. I know, yeah. I did, before kirtan or anything.
Nice. So deity worship is very important to arouse that affection for the Lord. Anybody else want to share something? Okay, then we can go share prasadam and engage in Krishna service and thank Srila Prabhupada for that, for having this Bhagavad Gita and all the knowledge that we need to know. Hare Krishna.